We are in our series called Gospel, going through all of the Gospels, the entirety of Jesus' life, teachings, death, and resurrection, seeing it as a single unified message, a single unified teaching. His whole life is one teaching called the Gospel. This is the verse for today. It's from Luke. It says, "Your eye is the lamp of your body. When your eyes are healthy, your whole body is also full of light. But when they are unhealthy, your body is also full of darkness. See to it, then, that the light within you is not darkness. Therefore, if your whole body is full of light and no part of it dark, it will be just as full of light as when the lamp shines its light on you." I love these kind of verses from Jesus. These are the kinds that you read and you go, oh, okay, wait, what? Right? Like, okay, what? Right? It's a kind of verse, there's a lot of these things that sound nice and good, and we go, yeah, and then at second glance, it's like, is this just gibberish? What are you saying? Eye is the light of the body, right? I love these verses because it never is. It's never gibberish. There is almost always something deeper, especially to the confusing teachings and words of Christ. There's always something deeper as we study and we look at them. Now, if this verse sounds familiar, it's because it is. Luke throws this in his gospel, kind of in the midst of some debates and some traveling and some different things. Matthew includes this in his gospel is part of a larger text, a part of a larger teaching on the topic. It kind of gives us a little bit more understanding of what this verse might be about, this eye and lamp and things like that. So let's take a look at Matthew's. This is how he starts. "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate one or love the other. You will be devoted to one or despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." Okay, so here we get a little more context into perhaps what this is about. Did you guys know that Jesus, this is unfortunate, by the way, Jesus teaches about money more than any other topic. You guys know that? Oh, it's like, what? No, not that one. Not you, Jesus. Most scholars, pretty much everyone kind of agrees that everything that Jesus does and that he demonstrates is this idea of the kingdom of God, right? It's always about this idea of the kingdom of God or about this gospel message. But one of the things that he references most in his teachings on the kingdoms or on the gospel is on understanding and accessing this kingdom and how it's perhaps different from this current world. The one way that he talks about it the most is about money. There's something very different about our understanding in this present age of our understanding of money, wealth, and possessions than this new kingdom, this real life that he's coming to offer. And so he keeps going back to it. It's all about money, possessions, generosity, whatever you want to call it. And one thing to note about this verse is that it's not really about having money. It's not about having possessions. It's about, and to use a very trite turn of phrase, whether or not your possessions have you, right? This is all what Jesus is talking about here. I know personally rich people who are very generous. They have much and they give much. I know rich people who are very greedy, always looking for more, always striving. It just seems like it's a game that they think they're winning or something. It's just confused, right? I know poor people who are very generous, give of the little that they have, constantly hands are open and welcome. I know poor people who are greedy, clinging to the little that they have and trying to get more, just whatever they can scrounge through this life and through this world. It's really not about whether you have it or not. It's not about whether you're rich or not. It's about where your heart is, where your love is, where your desire is. Jesus uses this word treasure. Treasure. Treasure is the most goofy word in the world now. Nobody has, like, when we talk about, like, where's your treasure? You'd be like, what do you mean? I don't even, are you a four-year-old? My daughter, my five-year-old has treasure. She literally has it. She does. She has a box that's full of treasure, and it's exactly what you would think. It's full of rubies and jewels and gems made of various Chinese plastics. It's fantastic treasure she has. So Jesus says, do not store up treasures, whatever that is, on earth where moths and vermin destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but store up treasures in heaven. And then this is, again, one of those head-nodding verses, like, yeah, yeah. And then you read it again, you go, wait, what are you talking about here? What in the heck does this mean? Store treasures up in heaven. Like, it's all of this, again, just sounds kind of silly to me. Or it sounds ethereal or existential gibberish. Even if I want to believe it, if I'm like, yes, I'm not going to treasure these things on earth. I'm going to put treasures in heaven. All of that, if I walked out here and someone keyed my car or broke the window or slashed my bike tire or broke into my house, you know, God forbid, all of it's gone. All of that mentality is out the window, right? I can't think straight, let alone wondering, is my treasure here? Have I put my promises on this? No, I'm just angry, right? Tell me that I'm not the only one that would agree with this. No matter how hard I hammer this point, the second we leave this place, if someone messes with my treasure, right? It's this strange thing. It's like, it's so hard. It's almost like Jesus saying, don't just inhale, breathe. Like, it's like, huh? I don't even know how to get there. What are you even talking about? This seems like a complete disconnect for me. Calvin said this, it's a major plague which we find rampant amongst mankind that they have a mad and insatiable desire for possessions. Right? We do. We love stuff. We have a video here I'm going to put up here. Maybe you guys haven't seen this. Let's see if it works out. We love stuff. Oh, I knew it. It's
going to be dressing room, and I couldn't find any place to put my stuff. And I don't know how you are, but I need a place to put my stuff. So that's what I've been doing back there, just trying to find a place for my stuff. You know how important that is. That's the whole meaning of life, isn't it? Trying to find a place for your stuff. That's all your house is. Your house is just a place for your stuff. If you didn't have so much goddamn stuff, you wouldn't need a house. You could just walk around all the time. That's all your house is. It's a pile of stuff with a cover on it. You see that when you take off in an airplane and you look down and you see everybody's got a little pile of stuff. Everybody's got their own pile of stuff. And when you leave your stuff, you gotta lock it up. Wouldn't want somebody to come by and take some of your stuff. They always take the good stuff. They don't bother with that crap you're saving. Ain't nobody interested in your fourth grade arithmetic papers. They're looking for the good stuff. That's all your house is. It's a place to keep your stuff while you go out and get more stuff. Now, sometimes you've got to move. You got to get a bigger house. Why? Too much stuff. You've got to move all your stuff. And maybe put some of your stuff in storage. Imagine that. There's a whole industry based on keeping an eye on your stuff. Enough about your stuff. Let's talk about other people's stuff. Did you ever notice when you go to somebody else's house, you never quite feel 100% at home? You know why? No room for your stuff. Somebody else's stuff is all over the place. And what awful stuff it is. Where did they get this stuff? And if you have to stay overnight at someone's house, you know, unexpectedly, and they give you a little room to sleep in that they don't use that often, someone died in it 11 years ago, and they haven't moved any of his stuff. Or wherever they give you to sleep, usually right near the bed, there's a dresser, and there's never any room on the dresser for your stuff. Someone else's is on the dresser. Have you noticed that their stuff is and your is stuff?
That's enough, Carlin. He's going to probably curse even more than that after that, so. Thank you, Ben. I love that bit. We love stuff, man. We really do. Something about it, when I first heard it, the idea of like, yeah, my house is just where I keep my stuff. Or like flying as I look down at the piles of people's stuff. Just like, oh, that's so true. Like, this is odd. It's an odd world that we live in. It's odd, the promise that we still kind of believe, even though we know it's not true, even though we know it's not real. It's still the promise. I heard this week, 68%, okay, listen to that number, 68% of our American economy is based on consumer spending. 68% of our economy is relying on us going out and buying stuff all the time, every day, constantly getting out and get right. Let me ask you a question. Tell me, be really honest. Just think about it, please. Have you ever just gone on Amazon to buy something? Like literally just something? Like you didn't have anything in mind. You were just like, let me just think. You kind of felt a little sad maybe, or a little empty, or a little like, ugh. And you're like, let me just see if there's something. And you, anybody? Anybody? Come on. Just scrolling. You don't need it. Heck, I don't even know what it is. Why would I don't need anything right now. I'm looking to see, what do I want? Not even, oh my gosh. And then there's two endorphin rushes that happen, right? There's the first one when you click the buy now, you're like, ah, I did it. I'm getting that spatula or whatever it is, right? And then there's the second one when the box shows up at your door and you don't even remember what you got because that's how little it mattered to you. But you're like, yeah, my stuff's here. I got my new stuff. There's something so weird. It's so interesting to me. It reminds me of a true court transcript that I read a long time ago. The judge said, you are charged with habitual drunkenness. What do you say in your defense? And the defendant said, habitual thirstiness? Like, there's something about this. We're always wanting more. Like, we're just never content. It's never like the moment where we're like, well, I guess I can cancel my Amazon account now. Like, or I guess I don't need a credit card. We're always needing more. We're always wanting more. It's this inevitable cycle. And Jesus is warning us about it. He's warning us about it. He's saying we want for more, guarding ourselves, neglecting the needs of others around us. And then what happens is thieves break in and steal and cheat and hurt. And then we end up guarding ourselves and our wants even more and protecting ourselves even more and saying no, no, no. And like, it just keeps this cycle going. It's the way of the world, right? Whoever dies with the most toys wins. It's kind of that, that's the mentality we have at times. One of my favorite philosophers, Bob Dylan, once said, steal a little and they throw you in jail, steal a lot and they make you king, right? In fact, so prevalent for so long was this thinking that the actual word rich, the word rich in the scriptures was a bad word. Like it was an implied evil to be rich. That if you're rich, you must steal. You must hurt and abuse people. I was reading this in James last week. Oh my gosh, listen to this verse, you guys. Look here, you rich people. By the way, it's never going to start. It's never going to go well when it starts with that, right? Look here, you rich people. Weep and groan with anguish because of all the terrible troubles ahead of you. Your wealth is rotting away, and your fine clothes are moth-eaten rags. Your gold and silver have become worthless. The very wealth you were counting on will eat away your flesh in hell. Oh my gosh. This treasure you have accumulated will stand as evidence against you on the day of judgment. For listen, hear the cries of the field workers whom you have cheated of their pay. The wages you held back cry out against you. The cries of those who harvest your fields have reached the ears of the Lord of Heaven's armies. You have spent your years on earth in luxury, satisfying your every desire. Now your hearts are nice and fat, ready for the slaughter. You have condemned and you have killed innocent people who do not resist you. And notice the issue here is not just having money. It isn't having possessions. It's what the possessions and money has done to them, what they have done in order to get those possessions. Lie, cheat, steal, kill, right? This is the dangers of this type of insatiable appetite for more. These are the dangers that Jesus is warning us from greed. And maybe you're in here saying, look, yeah, okay, fine. I totally get it. I don't lie, though. I don't cheat. I don't steal, right? I worked really hard for my stuff, for my possessions. I can look back on a life of achievement, on challenges met, competitors bested, obstacles overcome. I don't lie, cheat. I don't steal. This is my stuff. These are my treasures. But what Jesus says, don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth, but store them up treasures in heaven. Regardless of means, regardless of the ways in which you do it. And here's why. Jesus is telling us, here's why. Listen to this. Let's take a look at 1 Timothy chapter 6. Paul starts by saying, command those who are rich. Now, first of all, before we get to the rest, what does it mean to be rich? Who's rich? I'll tell you what, nobody in here thinks you're rich. Nobody thinks they're rich. There might be a few people in the world that are like, yeah, I'm rich. But nobody in here thinks we're rich, right? We're all pretty sure, like, okay, I'm fine, maybe. Some of you are like, no, I'm the opposite of rich. I'm very poor. There's plenty of feelings that we have. But biblically speaking, when Paul says, command those who are rich, who is he talking to? Earlier in this chapter, he says this. He says, godliness with contentment is great wealth. For we brought nothing into this world. We can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. So, according to Paul, who is like totally basic, by the way, but if you're not naked and you're not starving, you're good. That's Paul's like categorization. If you're not naked or starving, you're good. Biblically speaking, we're all so rich. We're all so rich. Back then, it was like two pairs of shoes was a wealthy man. Why do you need two? You can't wear them both. Literally, I'm not exaggerating. This is the reality of the current very wonderful, blessed age we live in, you guys. We're all very rich. So, so rich. That's biblically speaking. Even worldwide, we're all in the 1%. If you make even 15 grand a year, you're in the 1%. If you have a place to stay tonight, you're better than so much of the world's population. We're all very rich. And I'm not saying this to make us feel bad, but just to recognize the category in which we're in. We have much. We have much, even if we feel like we have little. Okay, so he goes on. Command those who are rich, apparently us. anyway, in this present world, not to be arrogant, nor put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves. Paul's referring back to Jesus as a firm foundation for the coming age so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. I love the way Paul describes that. I love that, right? It's like this is the access point. There's a fake life, a fake promise over here, and the only way to avoid it is to go and take hold of the life that is truly life. You see where Paul is taking us. He's taking us higher. He's taking us to a higher place, above this fake life, this false promise that we all believe. We all know, no one in here would get the answer to this question wrong. Does money buy happiness? We all know the answer. We all do. But we all kind of still think, yeah, but I've never seen anybody frowning on a jet ski. You know what I mean? Like, that still looks pretty good. I mean, I know I can't buy it, but, you know, if I got that new guitar, that would be pretty. I know it won't make me happy, but if we got that new place or if we went on that trip, if we could just right? We know it wouldn't be happy necessarily, but maybe just a little bit, like, right? Or maybe you'll say, yeah, it won't make me happier, but at least I'll have that new guitar. At least I got a jet ski now. Like, right? There is this false promise that we just keep going on believing and says, as long as I got the stuff, and it's like this deceptive, it's almost like a ritual in this world. Get more, have more, own more, do more, make more equals live more. Like, that's the way to life. I just have to get more. And of course not. Of course we know that's not true at all. We know it, but then we still go out and participate in this kind of game, this kind of ritual thing. It's all vapid. It's all chasing after the wind. Jesus says, don't store up treasures here. Store them up there. And this is how you do it, Paul tells us. Do good. Be rich in good deeds. Be generous and willing to share so that you may take hold of life that is truly life. Not the false life, the real life. And there's a practice. There is this practice of generosity that gets us to a place where we can let go of this false and fake life, and then we can take hold of the true life. There is a practice. There's something in this ritual of being generous, of truly giving of our stuff, that if we don't, it's almost like a safeguard that Jesus gave. Like, he knows, essentially, we're all going to, you know, we like stuff. He kind of knows that about us, and we're going to be selfish at some point. We're like, oh, well, this is mine. It's almost like he knows there's no way to combat that unless you're aggressively going the other way. Unless you aggressively continue to remember, this is not mine. and remember to be generous, remember to be good and to do good, to be rich in good deeds. And then Jesus comes out of left field with this verse for this morning. The eye is the lamp of the body. And he goes on and he says, if your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? This is, again, one of those verses. You read it, you say, okay, cool, light and dark, I got it. And then you just kind of read on. But there is a ton of historical significance in this verse, in this moment right here. This would have been a phrase that everyone would have understood when Jesus was teaching it. This would have been a phrase that everybody kind of, they got it. They understood what it was really all about. The phrase that Jesus uses here, for good eye, or some translations say a sound eye. This idea was a very common phrase in Jesus' day. In fact, it's used in the Old Testament. If you take a look at on your bulletins, there's a few examples. Deuteronomy says this, "You shall not pervert justice, you shall not show partiality, and you shall not take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and subverts the cause of the righteous." Proverbs says this, "He who has a bountiful eye, a good eye, will be blessed, for he shares his bread with the poor." Another one, it says, "He who gives to the poor will not want, but he who hides his eyes will get many a curse." We see here the eye, as Jesus is sharing here, is really all about generosity or greed, having a good eye or a bad eye, giving or taking. We see it again in Jesus' parable about the workers hired to go work at the vineyard. You guys remember that story? There's a guy who owns a vineyard. And so he needs some workers to go out in the field and help work in his vineyard. So earlier in the day, he goes out and he says, "Hey, I'll pay you one denarius if you come work in my field for the day." And the guys say, "All right, awesome." They go and work in the field. And he needs some more workers about halfway through the day. So he goes back out and he finds some more. And he says, "Hey, I'll pay you a denarius if you come and work in my field for the day." And they go out and do it. And then he needs some more at almost the end of the day. And so he goes out and he finds some workers there. And he says, "Hey, I'll pay you a denarius if you come and work in my fields for the day." And then at the end of the day, just a few hours later, the guy's paying all of his workers, and he pays the people who just showed up the denarius, he pays the people who were there half the day a denarius, and he pays the people who he got at the very beginning of the day a denarius, the promised wage. And they start grumbling, right? They start grumbling, just like we would do. I'm certain I would be the guy going, hold up. I noticed the guy who just got here got what I got. I've been here since the sun was rising. But Right, exactly. See, this is the problem. I know. Then what the guy, they're grumbling, right? They're mad. This isn't fair. This isn't okay. And Jesus says this single response that really shows us what this is all about. He looks at them and says, "Is your eye bad because I am good? Are you greedy because I am generous?" There's so much in that parable about the kingdom, about the nature of the kingdom, about the nature of grace, about our understanding. Oh man, there's so much in that parable. However, this idea of having a good eye, so powerful is this, that generosity, that Jesus says, if you have a good eye, if you are generous, your whole body will be good. If you're generous, it will affect every area of your life. And if you're greedy, the same. That's how powerful this single virtue or vice, whatever you want to call it, is. When we remember to be generous, when we remember that none of this is mine, none of this is earned, none of this is owed to me, but it's a gift from the God that created all. When we are generous, we break the cycle of greed, and we uproot the seed that was planted that ends up blinding our eyes. The only way to break the cycle of greed is to actually be generous. Does that make sense? It's not just like I'll just be vanilla. I won't be greedy. I just won't really be generous. No. The only way to not be greedy is to be generous. This is what Jesus is saying here. Generosity is so powerful. Giving is so transformational that it can define your life. If it can change everything about you, and so can greed. So this thing of living for the treasures of this world, Jesus' life, it demonstrates drastic and dramatic generosity. He cared for the needy. He gave to the hungry. He gave of himself for all of us. And his generosity was demonstrated so greatly that he even died for us that we might live, that we may follow in his steps, to have a good eye, to see as he sees those who are in need and be generous. And lastly, just to kind of continue with this entire pericope of Jesus' teaching, he puts the final nail in the coffin of this idea. He just says, no one can serve two masters. For you will hate one and love the other. You will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Jesus is asking us this morning, who are we going to live for? And I don't know about you, I always say, God. Maybe you're like, not today. But if you're like me, you go, God, I'm going to live for God. Like, totally. And I just want to, you know, keep a little money on the back burner. Like, I mean, I want to keep some savings. I don't want to be not wise. And I want to, it's really hard for me to put my trust in God and not in also, like, well, I try and maintain my house. I try and keep my books, you know, balanced. And I try to not just live haphazardly in this world. I think that's fine. I know that's fine. However, I also know that nothing puts my trust back in God more than dramatic acts of generosity that I feel I can't afford. And that doesn't mean just money. That means anything. That means my time, my energy, the things that I don't want to give. Nothing will change my heart, and nothing will make me, will allow me to have my faith really in God, in his arms once again, like taking away all the security blankets that I think I have. Because guess what? It's not secure. It's not secure. Thieves can come in and steal and rob and destroy. Fire can come. This life is so uncertain. There's no certainty in this. And the more I think I can get my stuff figured out and have it all laid out, the farther away I am, not only from God, but definitely the farther away I am from being able to truly be a generous person, because I got my stuff in place. Don't touch it, right? And we'll have the band come up. We're going to respond here in a moment. Jesus is asking us this morning, who are we going to live for? Are we going to live for God, or are we going to live for our possessions? It's a choice that we get to make every single day, even right now. This is the choice that we can make. During this next song, the band can come up. We're doing that last song we did. And we're going to receive communion. This is our opportunity to give and to receive. It's our opportunity. We have the offerings and all of that, but it's our chance to kind of center ourselves. And that's really what I want you to do, to take a moment to center yourself as we've been talking about this stuff. It's complicated, man. It's complicated. And I don't know, there's not a single part of this that I read where Jesus says, similar to what he has said at times, sell everything you own and give it to the poor. He isn't saying that today. But what he is saying is there is truly a choice in front of us. And the challenge of making the choice to say, I don't put my hope in my stuff, the challenge is, how do we put our hope in God without taking that step, without opening our eyes, without asking God, change my heart, change my eyes, change my understanding. Let me see as you see the needs around me, and help me to not have faith in what I have and what I do and what I can produce in this world, but have faith in you and in just following you and this gospel thing.
May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine. Countenance upon you and give.